T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Man, those two really hate each other. That feud's like Biggie Tupac level. Maybe even Morgan Freeman, Shailene Woodley level.
With Dusty Hera.
I'm not hygienic. I don't wipe properly. I lack style.
And the man who accepted impermissible teriyaki benefits as a college All-American, Cam Cleland.
Why does anybody in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food?
People are idiots, Ron.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Happy anniversary to Coug fans on this date, 2013, 7 years ago. Popcorn Guy became an internet sensation. Remember that game?
I don't remember that guy. I didn't remember that.
What? They were playing at CenturyLink Field.
Yeah.
And there was it was like in the post game, at the waning moments of the game, you had a guy passed out in the stands dumping popcorn all over his face. And that's when the nation found out Coug fans like to party. And boy, do they ever. And so happy anniversary, Coug fans, for that very popcorn special guy. Day of Washington State Popcorn Guy.
A friend of mine went to Washington State. He has 3 young kids, and he showed them the video of Popcorn Guy that went viral just so they knew their Coug lore. He said now he's finding little piles of popcorn all around his house because of it.
That's right.
Gotta raise them right.
You've got to pour it just all over your face. That's the best way to eat popcorn.
You know, they can't find that guy.
Really?
That's what I saw. Yeah, they're trying to. They can't find him.
They were trying to hunt him down for game day initially, and I think he didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah,
why not?
He's not a real Coug. He's not a real Coug fan. He's a fake. He's a poser.
I mean, real Coug fans are all about it.
Yeah,
from the fireball chugs to
Bush Light and that thing.
Woo! All right, hey, Seahawks are the lone perfect team in the NFC West after the Arizona Cardinals lost to the Detroit Lions. Ooh, Lions picked up their first win of the year.
Yes, they did.
The Seattle Seahawks now sit a perfect 3-0 after their win over the Dallas Cowboys, 38-31, right here on The Fan yesterday. But boy, did it come at a cost. Another injury-laden day for the Seahawks. 3 starters go down. You had Jordan Brooks, who's the replacement for Bruce Irvin. He's out with a knee sprain. You had Jamal Adams go down with a groin strain, where Pete Carroll said after the game, he said, I don't know how long this one's going to be.
Right.
It could be out for
a
while.
It's going to be a while. Yeah,
and
most definitely going to be a while.
The damn cheap shot, that Tristan Hill guy.
Twice.
For the Cowboys. He's going to have a big fine wallet, but the rolling over and twisting of Chris Carson's knee.
Brutal.
I don't get that, man. I understand it's a game where you're trying to impose your will or whatever, but that was just a dirty play.
It was pretty bad. In fact, it was, I mean, when you had to look at it a couple times and see it and really analyze, I mean, because part of the tackling and understanding that what they've done now is, you know, the roll tackle is really, that's nothing new when it comes to making sure that you don't hit guys in the head. The roll tackle when guys are up. This is as egregious as a tackle I've ever seen, because he knew he was on the ground. He could feel he was on the ground. No question about it, he was down. He could feel it. The way he rolled, turned twice, and full gator rolled. In fact, if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Head to my Twitter feed. You can see it. It's like my 3rd tweet down. It's the worst thing I have seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen headshots and cheap shots in this league for forever. And there isn't there isn't anybody that's looked at this that thinks this is okay. Anybody. And it's going to be fineable. Not just fineable, he's going to get a big fine for hitting Russ later in the game.
Yeah.
Because he took a headshot to Russ that gave them the opportunity for a two-point conversion.
And that is the thing, though, is that it wasn't just one play by Tristan Hill. It was the roll with Chris Carson, and then it was that late
it's a full Gator
shot
roll.
At the head at Russell Wilson, which that one is more explainable because we do see that often. It's just kind of, you don't see that late rolled. I mean, that's something that, I don't know. There's dirty plays that happen in football, but that seems like that is crossing the line of kind of the code amongst football
players.
Well,
that was blatant. He was blatantly trying to injure him. I mean, that's no question in my mind and no question in anyone else's mind that's looked at this and seen it. Now, if thing is about Tristan Hill is that he's put it on notice that every player is going to see it on film and he's going to be in big time trouble. The good thing about what we've seen so far and heard from the Seahawks is Chris Carson, who's in a free agent year. Reports are that there isn't significant damage in the knee because immediately when I saw it, I was like, oh man, I don't know if he's scheduled for a full MRI at this point to try to check and see. We haven't got those that, but hopefully this doesn't sideline him for quite some time.
Yeah. But that's the cost that, again, this 3-0 start for the Seahawks. You now have Chris Carson, who's questionable moving forward. Philip Dorsett is on the IR. You've got, was it Ethan Pochick, the center? He's questionable moving forward. Your right guard, Damian Lewis, is questionable moving forward. You've got three other offensive linemen that are out or on the IR. Yeah. And then you have Bruce Irvin, Marquise Blair, Nico Thorpe, Lano Hill, Jamal Adams, and Quentin Dunbar, all questionable moving forward.
Right.
We talk about the starters and kind of that top-heavy San Francisco 49ers injuries. The Seahawks are just as banged up, man. These wins have come at a massive cost. Is it sustainable moving forward now that you're on your third string strong side linebacker? Because it'll be Ben Burkervin moving forward, right?
Yeah.
And then you're also looking at your third string corner is going to be starting for you.
Yeah. It's as long as you have Russell Wilson right now. But no, of course, these injuries are going to be a big deal. Seahawks are not going to go 16-0. I feel pretty good about that. But you have to look at and measure up against your own division. Right now, you know, San Francisco is decimated. They're probably not going to get right till, man, at least another 4 weeks. Who knows how long before some of those guys get back and everybody, because when George Kittle and Jimmy Garoppolo get back, you see Richard Sherman coming off the IR. Of course, they lose their two big pass rushers, but that team's going to get healthier. So we're going to see them make a better push come November and December. Arizona is good, but so is L.A. You just got to find a way to keep pace in this division. If you get these early division wins versus these teams like Arizona and LA and also San Francisco when they're down, that can help propel you. But you're going to have to start searching the waiver wire. You're going to have to elevate guys, which they did off practice squad. They're going to have to find guys on the scrap heap. We haven't heard much out of Snacks who had
Damon Harrison.
Right, Damon Harrison, Snacks Harrison, who had a trip. We didn't hear much. It's been all quiet on that front, whether that'll be a signing.
I think the trip's coming this week. I don't think he's made the trip.
Okay, I thought, so it is this week.
They agreed last week he'd come in this week for a visit.
And he's still got to visit the Bears, Washington football team, Cincinnati, and one other play. Is he going to San Francisco too?
Yeah. I knew a bunch of other teams had interest. I don't know if he's actually scheduled to make visits there.
Well, if he matters a lot, then the Seahawks won't let him leave the building without a deal. If they like the situation and it works out, they won't let him leave Seattle without signing, some sort of deal. But yeah, you just, as long as you can keep Russell Wilson upright and the offense is there, you're going to be in those games. But the defense needs a lot of work.
You know, if with all these injuries that San Francisco's having too, you have to take a look at, the schedule that's in front of you too. And San Francisco's had a ton of injuries and they've gone 2-0 with all of them because they played the Jets and the Giants. Well, they got the Eagles and Dolphins the next 2 weeks too. And I mean, the way that the Eagles are playing, they're a wounded, dog right now and they're 0-2-1 because they tied.
You can't take anybody lightly at this point. They're not going to have that luxury.
But if you're looking at it, it looks like Kittle and Jimmy G will be back for that game, which is great news for them. But they still have their other concerns. as you go down the depth chart and down the roster. But then they have Miami after that. So they got the Eagles in Miami. I mean, you hate to say these injuries come at a good time, but it's not like you're playing Seattle and the Rams and the Cardinals in back-to-back-to-back weeks, because after you have these two games, you have the Rams, Patriots, Seahawks, Packers, Saints, Rams, Bills all in a row.
I'm not here to tell you that the Miami team is a dangerous, scary team, but they're a tough out. Okay, as much as they did on Thursday Night Football, they did put up a lot of points. They put up a lot of points. They made it very difficult on the Tennessee Titans, extremely difficult on the Tennessee Titans to go down south. They're not an easy out.
Well, the Patriots had to grind one out against them, too. Yeah, that game was only like 20-11.
That's a well-coached football team with a veteran guy who's loving life, celebrating. So that's not, you're not going to just going to walk in and think Miami's going to be an easy, easy win.
When are they going to go to every other rookie's playing, and they're playing well. Yep. Herbert's playing well. Burrow's playing well. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you holding on to?
Well, if they keep
winning. Hope in the division, I guess. I mean,
yeah, keep winning.
I mean, you probably could see him after the next couple of weeks.
Fitzpatrick does this typically.
They have Seattle and San Francisco over the next couple of weeks. We probably see him come in against, I don't know, the Jets or whatever.
I mean, I know they're just, they're 1-2, but if they're still in striking distance in their division, they may try to keep that going for a while. But, you know, they fall 2, 3, 4 games back behind either the Bills or the Patriots. You've got to imagine Tua's coming, what do we think, by like week 8?
Well, week 10? I honestly do. I think it could come in 3 weeks. Because they have Seattle this week, San Francisco the following week, and then you have Denver. And Denver could be that team that you roll out to against.
It really depends on their philosophy right now. If they're trying to really, I know they're trying to win football games. Are they trying to keep Tua healthy for the future? Or are they at that point where they're going to let Fitzpatrick, because if he's upright and he's healthy and he starts continually just holding it together, it doesn't look like their philosophy is to put Tua in.
But yeah,
it doesn't. I know you could keep chanting for it, and it's not like fans in the stands are going to be in there yelling, put Tua in, put Tua in. They're not going to worry about it.
But that is the thing with Miami, though, is that wouldn't the 5th overall pick be the guy who gives you the best opportunity to win if you're in it to win games? And isn't that a bigger question mark if he isn't?
I'm not in that meeting room, so I have no idea what their philosophy is on offense at this point.
I would sit there and say that if you have the number 5 overall pick, that would be the guy that you sit there and says, this guy gives us the best chance. And then, again, this goes back to if he's fully healthy. And now he's not on the injury report. He was on week 1 with the hip injury. But moving forward, if he is healthy, you would think that, you know, he's the franchise. He's the guy of the future for you.
Text here going back to that Tristan Hill dirty play, the Gator Roll play. This one says, imagine finding that guy money for each game that Carson is out. That might work. What if you did that? What if you said, if we watched you intentionally hurt someone, you get fined for every game that they miss?
I really do hope the league and the commissioner and everybody goes after this. I know it's getting some play a little bit because the fact that it didn't get much on the broadcast, they kind of glossed over it really quickly. Shocking, Troy Aikman. But there's going to be, the league finds these types of things. The other thing about this is players police their own. This isn't going to play well in the locker room that he's on with his other guys because they know that now guys are going to be targeting him and the players for retribution. It's like, you just made us a target. Now we need to find other reasons to do this. That's a bad play on this kid. And he's in his second year coming out of UCF, so he's still probably learning the ins and outs. That's not how you roll in this league. You can take a guy out when you're taken out, going for tackles. When guys are up, you're going to hit a guy really hard. We've seen guys hit hard. You're not trying to physically, intentionally, when someone's already down, end somebody's career by ripping their knee up. That's a different deal. Mm-hmm. You want to hurt guys. That's part of the league. We know it. It's part of the league. That is uncalled for.
Yeah. How does the defense overcome, though? The defense has been bad. We talked about this earlier. The pass defense ranks dead last by a wide margin. And now you do lose Jamal Adams, who's been a linchpin, not just for your pass defense, but your pass rush.
All over the place. Yeah.
And that's where he got hurt, was rushing on the edge.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, Quentin Dunbar is out.
Yeah.
Nico Thorpe is out. Lano Hill is out. Marquise Blair is out.
You know who's been playing great, though, to props up? Ugo Amadi, man. Not only did he step up, that guy is all over the field, too. Energy, couple swats. The dude plays bigger than 5'9". He's just been a playmaker out there. So it's great. It's the next man up mentality. So you ask the question, how do you combat that? You take the Ugo Amadi approach. You go next man up. You just have to. Of course, you can't replace somebody like a Jamal Adams, and you hope his groin can heal, because that's a hard injury to deal with when you're a defender.
And a linger, too.
You can do that when you're an O-lineman, D-lineman. When you're a backpedal guy, front move, sideways, especially when you see a lot of cornerbacks that come out of that are always in backpedal in their groins, that's a 4 or 5 weeker. I mean, I'm guessing, hopefully it's not that long.
Well, they got 3 weeks to get right, because you have Miami and Minnesota.
When's their bye week, by the way?
It's in 3 weeks. Okay. You have Miami, Minnesota, a bye, and then you start Arizona, San Francisco, right. Buffalo, LA, Arizona. I mean, they have
that's a gauntlet.
They have a 5-game just stretch where you better be healthy by the time you get there, or this thing could unravel. But as it is right now, they're the only 3-0 team in their entire division. And that's got to be great news that you're in the catbird seat in the toughest division in all of football right now, the NFC West. There's a lot of divisions that aren't looking so good. The NFC East is one of them. Do they have any coaches that are feeling the hot seat right now? Which coaches won't make it to the end of the year? 503-250-1080. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. All right, the hot seat is getting scorching for a few names in the National Football League. Dan Quinn and the Atlanta Falcons have another meltdown. Adam Gase and the Jets. Boy, oh boy, that was bad. But you have injuries are a concern for a lot of teams that have been discussed. And we mentioned earlier, the Niners have 40% of their payroll not playing due to injury. But Kyle Shanahan said this: we still expect to play well despite injuries. And we still expect to play well, again, because we feel we're a well-coached and a good football team, right? How many of these teams are not well-coached in the National Football League, though? Because there are some guys right now that it feels like a lot of dead men walking in the NFL.
Well, there's 32 jobs in the world that are really, really difficult. And we always talk about, you get a top five, there are elite coaches, and there are coaches that can find their way to coach themselves out of failure or bad attitudes or bad coaching staffs that are underneath you. And you can start to see fingers pointed out. But there's a reason why you have really great quarterbacks matched up with really great coaches. So with that, to answer that question, how many bad franchises are out there with bad coaches that should be fired? I don't look for anybody's job, but in a performance-based business, there's a power ranking of which coach deserves to go and how bad it looks optically, because you've had players quit on you, and that starts and ends with the Jets. After that, it's pretty subjective.
So this texter has a couple thoughts on different coaches. One says that it would save so much legacy if Dan Quinn would just resign. I don't see why Sean Payton is not on the hot seat, and Mike Zimmer should take a deep down look to see if he should leave.
Well, how much? Okay, fair question. How much of that do you think, because of this year and the pandemic and not getting a lot of preseason, getting a chance to know your guys and get through that, is there any sort of grace period from an ownership group or anybody along those lines that look in that situation?
Well, I mean, if you're a first-time head coach, sure, but if you're not...
Well, you mentioned Joe Judge. That's why I was, like, shocked by them.
Well,
like, really? Here's the thing
with Joe Judge is that they're not just getting beat. They're getting absolutely obliterated every single week. This past week against the Niners, the Niners are a mass unit. They lost 36-9. The game was never close.
Like, they don't have any big players. They lost Saquon Barkley. They don't have Odell Beckham. Their quarterback is Daniel Jones, who still he's learning under a new system, completely new system with Jason Garrett and a new head coach.
But if you talk about
it,
here's where it all started with the Joe Judge. And I don't believe that he will lose his job after 1 year, but you got to start considering the factors that are at play. He's an old school, hard line, hard edge coach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he's making guys run. He's, you know, restarting practices, all this stuff. And that works if you're winning and you see results on the field. Yeah. At what point does that start wearing thin to where the players are like, okay, come on, man. We need to change our course right now. And they start tuning him out and that style out.
That answer is very difficult. It's a difficult question. And it doesn't make any sense to fire somebody like that to start, because he's trying to change a culture. Tom Coughlin had to do something to the Giants. He had to completely flip his mentality and change a culture, and it resulted in 2 Super Bowls and then moved on from when he went down to Jacksonville and finished out his career, but then now he's just that. it's just way, way, way too early to answer that question. If you're changing a culture and trying to take something out, it's going to take time. You can't just flip it.
Yeah, but if we saw, you know, what's been going on with that franchise over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, at least they are winning, you know, 4-12 last year. Isn't that what they went 4-12 last year?
Mm-hmm.
At what point, where do you think they pick up their first win? Because they go on the road to the Rams and on the road to the Cowboys. They're going to start 0-5.
Right, terms, yeah.
I mean, yeah. My goodness.
This texter says.
That's where you're in a dangerous territory.
This texter says that without Russell Wilson, the Seahawks would be the Giants.
Oh, no, they're a better coach team than the Giants. They have more talent than the Giants. They would not be the Giants. Without Russell Wilson, they would not. They would be maybe a six-win team. I'd give them six wins. That'd be probably about it. Russell makes you a double-digit winning organization because he's great. But the Giants don't have any talent because they lost it in injuries.
Well, then they just haven't drafted well either.
That's not
well
fair
either.
To say they don't have any talent. They just don't have the big superstar playmakers that they're waiting to develop and get there.
Yeah, and right now, I think you're looking at it, they'd be closer to Minnesota, you know? The Seahawks would.
Yeah.
And right now, Minnesota is
the Bears,
0-3 right in and collapsing.
And the Bears are 3-0.
Well, the Bears are 3-0, but they have a very good defense. They're a well-coached team, and my goodness, their defense is good.
Yeah.
In Chicago. That is a surprising 3-0 start. I mean,
it's a good 3-0 start for the Bears. I'm excited for the Bears.
Grinding out wins, too.
Yeah, I'm excited for Matt Nagy. Of course.
You think they can challenge for the division?
I think,
Green Bay's good.
Let's wait and see. Yeah, let's wait and see how they match up and play when you're facing Green Bay, because Aaron Rodgers looks like he's been reinvented, invigorated with snap and the way he's throwing the football all over the place. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, the Bears are. And come on, all it takes is that's how they got into the playoffs not too long ago. Or I'm sorry, when they were really humming, the Bears weren't blowing anybody out. They were just finding a way to win a couple games. Just couldn't make a field goal.
You know, incredible part too about what Green Bay's doing is yesterday they went to New Orleans and a lot was made about Michael Thomas not being there. Not as much being made about no Devontae Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They dropped a 37 on the Saints without their best wide receiver.
No, Adams,
on the
no
field.
Problem. Lazard had like 146 yards.
Right.
He was an
That's
animal.
On the defense of New Orleans, man. The offense did all they could, and not having Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara's worth every penny they paid him. He played spectacular, and he's had to make up the gap for Michael Thomas. That's on the defense yet again for New Orleans. I mean, Cam Jordan said it after the game. He said, inexcusable. That's on us.
In 2 weeks in a row, we have seen some really, really bad penalties from their cornerbacks.
Yes.
Like last night, they were, just so blatantly obvious to the officials. It's not even like an attempt to cover the guy the legal way.
But you also have, at what point do we sit there and say, yeah, their offense, if their defense has been an issue with New Orleans, but now Green Bay has gone 43, 42, 37 in their first 3 weeks.
Right.
Their offense
funny
is
numbers.
Incredible.
Right. They're putting up funny numbers.
What they're doing.
Yep.
503-250-1080. Which coach doesn't make it to the end of the year? I think we can all agree it's Adam Gase, right?
He's the leader in the clubhouse. Dan Quinn's very close. But Dan Quinn's a good guy and a good coach. And he hasn't lost his locker room like Adam Gase has. They've all lost. And I feel for Atlanta only on the emotional side of being on a team where you can't get out of your own way. They're hurt. They can't believe. Last two games, 98% win percentage for them analytically going into the fourth quarter. They're stuck. They have like a brain block right now.
But doesn't that come? That comes down to your coaching.
No, it doesn't coaching.
You have talented guys. Well, kick, they didn't. Even their owner came out and Arthur Blank was like, obviously they didn't know what was going on there and they didn't know they needed to pick up that ball. Like, that is something where it's maybe not on Dan Quinn. It's on your special teams coordinator there.
There's a lot of things that
and
are at
fault.
And
it's on your players. But then you have a 16-point fourth quarter lead and you get outscored by 20 in that fourth quarter. I mean, it's time and time again. It's in so many different ways that it's happening.
You were one field goal or one kick away from being Super Bowl champs, and we'd be talking about this in a completely different manner. It is an emotional discharge by that whole organization. Those guys know how to play football. They don't believe. The fact that, and I've never seen an onside kick in the history of the NFL that looked like that. So to say you're prepared for that Is it inexcusable? Yeah, jump on the football. But there's a guy that's on the tight end that's on the edge going, what do I do? What do I do? They're all nervous. They're playing nervous. They're playing not to lose. And that's the thing, is they're not playing to win. They're playing not to lose. And that's fear. You can't be afraid to lose here. You got to go get the game. And that starts with your coaches and Matt Ryan, your playmakers. And you didn't have Julio Jones at all. You had your best player on offense out of that game. That's a big deal, too.
Well, but you were still up six. And that, there's where the frustration kicks in with Atlanta. Yeah. You were still up 16.
You were up
16 entering the fourth quarter, and you laid the egg again. And that's where the frustration starts. And you're right. They were close. They were 28-3, and it happened again.
Selfishly, I would like to see Dan Quinn back as the Seahawks defensive coordinator. But, you know, I still think he's a good guy and a good coach.
So you think Ken? Well,
I'm not a fan of Ken Norton's style. I'm just not. I'm not. I haven't been. I'm not a fan of that. And I think it's been statistically proven that it's not working very well.
Yes, dead last in the NFL in pass defense.
Yeah.
And total defense right now.
Right.
All right. Let's hit every NFL game of the weekend rapid fire style next after Buck with SportsCenter. All right, time to whip through it. The NFL Week 3 has one more game remaining tonight, Monday Night Football, which we are talking about to wrap up the show. But let's talk about the 14 games over the NFL from a day ago. We will start in Buffalo, where the Bills improved to 3-0 with a convincing 35-32 win over the LA Rams. It was a late charge by the Rams. They scored 29 points in the second half, but the Bills hold them off behind 311 yards and four touchdowns from Josh Allen.
A great comeback by the Rams. You would think the Bills know a lot about comebacks in that stadium, but it came down to penalties and bad pass interferences that gave the Bills multiple opportunities, and Josh Allen looks like a guy that, all right, I could start a little bit of a conversation of this kid is pretty good, and so are the Bills.
Oh, all right. Pretty good now.
Yeah.
Well, the Bills, I mean, you're a product of the system that you're in.
Yeah.
He was in that 2018 draft class where a guy who was the number one pick in Baker Mayfield is struggling right now, but they pick up a 34-20 win over Washington thanks to a pair of touchdown passes by Baker Mayfield, but only 156 yards passing for Mayfield in the win.
It's always about how your coach coaches you and with the quarterback situation. Haskins, too many turnovers, fumbles. They've taken Baker Mayfield, taking the ball out of his hands, put it in the run game. They're playing really good defense. The Browns are better coached. It just shows you better discipline. Good job for the Browns. And they, all right, Browns, figure it out.
Nick Foles came in to replace Mitchell Trubisky in the second half for the Chicago Bears. He had a dark visor. He ended up taking it off, and they scored 20 points in the fourth quarter. Falcons collapse again. They blow a 16-point lead in the fourth.
Well, Mitchell Trubisky came out and said, I gave my coach, Nagy, an opportunity to pull me out. He just admitted that he did something not good enough to play, and they were just waiting for this, which means to tell me that they were always trying to get this done. They just had to find a reason to do it, and thank gosh that Matt Nagy had the balls to probably finally pull it out, because we can need to pull the plug on the Mitch Trubisky era. Let's go, Bears. You're going to be better.
All right. The Minnesota Vikings became the first team in NFL history to have a player with over 175 yards rushing and a player with 175 yards receiving, as Dalvin Cook went for 181 and Justin Jefferson went for 175 through the air as a wide receiver. They're the first team to ever do that, and they're also the only team to ever lose doing that. They lose 31-30 to the Titans.
Well, it's more about what the Titans are doing. You get six field goals from Gostkowski? Six field goals? I could do math. That means that their offense couldn't find a way to score as much in the red zone, but good for the kicker. You know, be proud with it. You got to find a way to win at this point.
Nice job, you kicker!
Hey, and that division doesn't look scary at all right now, and all they're doing is finding ways to win ugly, and that's what they did in the playoffs last year.
Well, the Raiders got a taste of their own medicine in Foxborough. 36-20, the Patriots put it to Las Vegas, and it was behind 250 yards rushing by the Pats, 117 of those coming from Sony Michel.
There's no question in my mind that the Patriots are the surprise team in the NFL right now, and it is because of Cam Newton, but you should never tell me that Bill Belichick won't be prepared. They were prepared. The Raiders did not look prepared for the answers they had, and even Cam Newton said he needed to play better. This was on John Gruden and that offense. You were smelling your own brand after beating the Saints, and you went on the road, didn't show up. They don't have a lot of luck there in Foxborough. I remember a play in 2001. It might have happened.
the incomplete pass. The snow game.
Right, it's a tough rule.
No, tough. Snow game. Niners had everybody hurt. No Kittle, no Garoppolo, no Solomon Thomas, no Nick Bosa. No problem. 36-9 over the hapless Giants.
I'll start it right now. San Francisco. Quarterback controversy.
Ooh.
Nick Mullins.
Okay.
Let's go.
Tell you what, as far as backups go, Nick Mullins, I think, might be one of the best in the league.
He's pretty credible, isn't he? Not bad.
Granted, it was the Giants. Just I did not Giants. Think they were going to find a way to put up 36 points.
Oh, they find a win. That's a good road win. And by the way, the turf survived. And so did you, San Francisco. You made it through the hardest turf to play on in all the world.
Didn't it take out another lineman for him, though?
No. I think it was the tight end down? That was...
Reed went down.
Reed twisted his ankle, but then he came back. He was fine.
It's fine. Well, Nick Mullins went for 343 yards in that game.
Quarterback controversy.
He also threw for only 100 in the other game. All right, let's go to the tie. I don't know what Doug Peterson was thinking, but the 0-2-1 Eagles escape the Bengals 23-23. He decided to punt with 19 seconds to go in overtime, facing a 4th-and-12.
I was more impressed with the quarterback play of Joe Burrow. He took some hits in this game that I would never recommend for a punching bag to take, yet he took them and got back up. He is tough. He is as advertised. Good for him to get in a chance to face Carson Wentz, who is playing emotionally broken because of the Jalen Hurts draft pick. They look disheveled, and their coach looks undetermined to win that he punted. He punted. He didn't go for it on 4th-and-12. This is on the Eagles fans. And guys going down, getting hurt. I know, it's excuses.
He has no faith in Carson Wentz right now.
None, and Carson Wentz doesn't believe in himself. And don't think that guys don't get affected by that, and they're playing scared. That was scared team.
The Texans went and got shut out in the second half, and they lose to the Steelers 28-21. Big Ben back.
The battle of the Watt brothers. How about that? The battle of the Watts. You know, the Steelers are going to quietly just sneak up everybody's
board.
Two
is better than one.
Two is better than one, according to Pittsburgh. And J.J. Watt's got to put his thumb out because he's going to need to hitchhike out of that town real soon and ask to get traded. It's the Steelers are a good football team, and they continue to win. And they're I'm already excited for that matchup for the Baltimore. Steelers are sneaky Super Bowl contenders.
Someone pointed it out earlier, but how brutal was that of a start for the Texans to have to face the Chiefs, Ravens, and Steelers in your first three weeks?
That's brutal.
That's not great.
Yep, and they
play your schedule though.
They could rebound. They got the Vikings, Jags coming up in the next 2 weeks before the Tennessee Titans. All right, Sam Darnold. Threw three interceptions, two of them for touchdowns, took a sack for a safety, and the Indianapolis Colts absolutely manhandled the Jets 36-7. Are the Colts finding their rhythm? They're now 2-1 after melting down to start the season against the Bears.
A little bit of confidence. There's two good football teams. Still think I picked the Colts to win the division, although Tennessee is going to that's going to be a battle between those two. Tennessee's looking pretty solid. Colts have a better offense. Right now, the Jets aren't even worth mentioning. I mean, they're just gone. Emotionally gone, physically gone. They've quit, and it's not even week four.
Remember when Tom Brady was written off in week one after his performance against the Saints? He followed that up with 297 yards, three touchdowns in a 28-10 win over the Denver Broncos, where the best thing that they had going for themselves was a South Park section in their stadium.
Remember when Denver was a hard place to play? Remember when going to Mile High, the altitude... Tom Brady struggled there in a couple playoff games. What in the world was that? That was the most quiet, appalling game. Nobody talked about it. And by the way, Gronk got a catch. So Gronk found a way to catch
football.
He had
six of them.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
He had six catches for 48 yards. I think Peyton Manning and Jeff Driscoll are the differences with the way that the Broncos are playing in the playoffs or at Mile High. Yeah. You know? I mean... They were good when they had a good quarterback. Right now, they're rolling out Jeff Driscoll. The Lions beat the then undefeated Cardinals 26-23, picking up their first win of the year. Kyler Murray, though, impressing with his legs and his arm once again. He throws for 270 and a pair of touchdowns in the loss.
You mentioned it early in the show regarding one catch, and this team is 2-1. I mean, really? That's the Detroit Lions? Are they better than what we think they are? Are they still the Detroit Lions? If you're beating a hot team, which Arizona was very hot, and you have Kyler Murray, who's arguably the most electric quarterback right now with his physical, with the way he has talent, both foot speed, ball speed, and he has D-hop like that. That's an epic fail loss by the Cardinals.
And they did it on the road.
And they did. They did it on the road.
Lions win on the road, man.
Kicker did it.
The Panthers upend the Justin Herbert-led L.A. Chargers 21-16. Herbert, though, 330 yards, an interception, and a fumble in the game. He said, we can't turn the ball over three times if we're going to win. Herbert playing well despite being 0-2.
That's an offensive failure for me for watching what the Chargers have done, because they made a rookie in his second start have to throw the almost 50 times. He went had 49 throws. They shouldn't be doing that. They should not. They should take a page and look at what Cleveland's doing with letting the run game happen. But by the way, their running game just suddenly went epic fail. And they had to throw. And they had to throw. And if you're taking Christian McCaffrey, which is 50 to 60% of your offense away, and you can't battle Teddy Bridgewater in that group, you needed a hook and ladder to win. That's disappointing. No question in my mind the Chargers are a better roster. Should have won that football game.
Seahawks right here on the fan pulled out a 38-31 win over the Cowboys, and Russell Wilson made history. He has 14 touchdown passes on the young season. It's the most touchdown passes through the first 3 weeks of a season.
Every time you watch the Seahawks play, it's a great football game. I mean, every game they've played thus far, it's a great football game, from Atlanta to the way they played on the road, watching them last week, and then again this week. Every game is interesting, and it's interesting because of one man, Russell Wilson, and the way they find ways to win. All you got to do is find a way to win every time they play.
Hey, it doesn't matter how bad your defense is. If you're getting wins, that's what matters.
They're
right now.
Interesting story, and right now Russell Wilson's the best player in the NFL.
Speaking of playing some of the best football in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers are behind the arm of Aaron Rodgers. Sunday Night Football, a shootout in the Superdome as Green Bay comes out on top 37-30. Aaron Rodgers going for 283 yards and a trio of touchdowns.
So when you're not a nice guy like Aaron Rodgers and you're a nice guy like Carson Wentz, when you draft your heir apparent, allegedly, you take it personally, to the personal factor where you go, oh, really? You're going to draft this guy? Let me show you what it's like when you have Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has said this. Watch out. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He got rid of Danica, and that might have made a little bit better mentality, because you all know he's a little aloof, and now he doesn't have a girlfriend hanging on him anymore. This guy's throwing the ball all over the yard, and that's more of a failure, too, to show that the Saints defense, who was supposed to be pretty good, they've got a loss to the Vegas Raiders and John Gruden, and now you lost to another West Coast-style offense that just picked you apart with Aaron Rodgers.
That is our NFL rapid fire, all 14 games from a day ago. We still have one more game to go in the NFL's week 3, and it's a doozy, folks. Monday Night Football has got the juice back. Chiefs, Ravens tonight from Baltimore. Dustin Cam on the fan. All right, we've got a Monday Night Football game that we have wanted. The two best teams in the AFC right now are the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. These two teams have the current active winning streaks in the NFL's for regular season wins. 14 regular season wins in a row for Baltimore, 8 in a row for the Kansas City Chiefs. This is the Monday night schedule and Monday night game that I remember as a kid, man. The juggernauts playing each other.
This game last year, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Chiefs found a way, right? No, I'm sorry. It was in Baltimore. Correct?
No, it was in Kansas
City.
Kansas City.
Well, I can't remember anything. I thought I could remember. Guess I can't remember. Can't remember.
Was it a good
turnabout game? Is fair play on this one, right?
What do you mean?
Well, we have two of the best quarterbacks, two very good defenses. What's going to separate this game? How are you going to figure this out? I always say it comes down to turnovers, but there's a couple mistakes that happen in this game. Which team is more prone to mistakes in big moments? I saw a team last year with Baltimore in big moments in a game plan with Tennessee, came in a little bit confident, and they thought that they took the easy way, and just because they showed up, they were going to do it. I don't believe Baltimore is going to do that. I believe Baltimore wins this football game because they want it more right now than the Chiefs. And it's not to say that the Chiefs don't have every bit of talent and they can do it. I just think that there's an edge to Baltimore, what they learned something different. They got rid of Earl Thomas. That opened up the locker room mentality tremendously. You can see it. Earl Thomas still out of a job. Shocking, I know. This is a game for the Ravens to make that statement of we're the better team in the AFC. I think the Ravens get this game.
Well, last year, You saw Kansas City at home. They beat them 33-28, but we saw Lamar Jackson. It was kind of like that, oh, hey,
yeah,
look at this guy.
Yeah, stepping out.
They then lost the next week to Cleveland, and they won 12 in a row after that. They went on a 12-game winning streak. They had their hiccup week three last year, week four last year, KC and Cleveland, and then they just went on an absolute heater to end the year, and you ended up with an MVP quarterback in Lamar Jackson. And so this is going to be a great game. I don't know. There's no way that you can sit there and say, I see this going a blowout one way or the other. I like Kansas City in this game, though. Okay. There's something about that team that been there, right? And they're just so calm, cool, and collected in these big moments, especially early in the year. Like Kansas City and Andy Reid teams, don't they always start out just on fire? And then their hiccup comes like middle of the season, those dog days in late October. And that's when they start dropping games. And then all of a sudden they turn it on at the end of November and really make a charge down the stretch.
Well, it's the only thing I have to go back on is experience of being on a team that's come off a Super Bowl and had a first three wins and kind of the world is at your fingertips because you think you're better than you are. And you start smelling your own brand. I was a part of that team in 2002 with the Patriots where we went 3-0 and everything was like, all right. And then all of a sudden there was just a mash of things that happened. If Kansas City can find that juice, and here's the thing is the fat and happy mindset will be is that everybody got paid. There's a lot of guys that made a lot of money, so they all are counting their money. They've had two big-time wins, two solid wins to start off the season. One, they barely snuck out and beat a Justin Herbert. They needed a big-time field goal, so that was a little hiccup. That was one of something no one predicted that was going to happen versus the Chargers. Now you're going to face a team where you got to get up and get ready for. I've never seen Andy Reid and his team like that be the kind of they came back from a huge deficit when Tennessee came to town. I'm sorry, when Houston came to town last year. This is a tough game to pick. It just thinks that Baltimore just has an edge side to them. Like they really, really want this game. Kansas City's like, we got a Super Bowl. We got a lot of money. Okay, it's important to us, but who's it really more important to? Who's got more on the line in this game? It's the Ravens.
Couldn't you see the wake-up call coming last week for the Chiefs, though?
Too early in the season.
You're not invincible, guys. You almost got taken down by this team.
I think you're good enough for the Chiefs where you can play your B-minus game and still win football. That's how good you are. You're going to need your A game tonight.
Well, yeah, and that's why I say that wake-up call.
Let's hope they bring the juice because then we can come down to a last-possession kind of game on Monday night. It would be great.
It always feels to me like the Chiefs are just – they only need about 6 minutes to get back into a game, even if they're out of it, so to speak. But the Ravens' defense is going to make that a whole lot tougher, you would think. I don't know if we're going to see a shootout tonight, but I think there will be enough on the Ravens' side of the ball to maybe slow Mahomes down.
Well, the other thing, too, about the Chiefs, about what made the Ravens so vulnerable – in the postseason was that they faced a team that went up against them physically and punched them in the mouth early and made them have to throw the football. If Kansas, and this is a big if Kansas City can score a couple times pretty quickly, I don't know if the Ravens are built to come back from multiple touchdowns if they have the quick strike ability. They are a plug, hit you, score over time. Kansas City gets up by 2-3 touchdowns. I don't know if they have the juice to come back quickly.
And something to keep an eye on, though, is the fact that through 2 weeks, and granted, it's only 2 weeks, but they've only allowed 22 points.
Yeah.
Baltimore, but they haven't seen an offense like Kansas City. They saw a Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski in their first game, and then they saw Deshaun Watson, who's still trying to figure out how to use those receivers in Houston.
It's going to be fun.
This is a true test for that defense as well. And you got good on good, man. This Ravens defense is legit, and we'll see how real they are with Kansas City tonight in Baltimore. Monday Night Football, 5:15 kick.
What? I got a little bit of a breaking news just for the Chris Carson update. MRI confirmed Chris Carson's ligaments are intact.
Good.
Just a minor knee sprain for Chris Carson. So that
excellent
is great news.
Good. One or 2 weeks, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's great hopefully. News. Oh, man, that is fantastic news. And Tristan Hill, my gosh, what a dirtbag.
Well,
that was a dirtbag play.
Get your checkbook
actually, I don't
ready.
Know him. What a dirtbag play that was, though.
It's a dirtbag play.
Yeah. Also, did you see what Doug Peterson said in his interview this morning?
No.
He was asked on WIP in Philly about benching Carson Wentz for Jalen Hurts. He said, no, you don't go there. That's a knee-jerk reaction. They're already calling for it in Philly. All right. Tomorrow we'll break down Monday Night Football. Plus, we got to get our postseason picks in. 16 teams in the Major League Baseball postseason, including the team that I said I was pulling for and completely forgot about them. How far do they make it in the Major League postseason? Up next, you got The Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague, 3 to 7, Primetime with Isaac and Soup, Duck Insider, 7 to 8 p.m. after that. Have a great Monday, see you Tuesday right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.